Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello and welcome to EASD TV. Now, today we are talking numbers. And with me in our studio, two people, one of whom you probably don't know all that well, Chantal Mathieu, president of EASD, but actually here on our sofa to talk about all things registry and numbers and screening. And with her is Professor Annette Ziegler from the Helmholtz in Munich. And I think we call you the screening queen of type 1 diabetes. So let's talk a little bit about how screening has suddenly become something that we should really think about in type 1.
I think the change came through the introduction of stages and the recognition that type 1 diabetes actually starts already when islet antibodies appear. It starts with when the autoimmunity starts. And therefore, of course, the question is, can one diagnose already in this phase to improve clinical care, to avoid complications at clinical onset, and also to provide the possibility of access to disease-modifying therapies? And we now call this stage one of type 1 diabetes disease. And a game changer, I think, was that we could demonstrate through a study called FRIDA in Bavaria that public health screening for this stage is feasible
and acceptable to parents.
And acceptable to primary care practitioners and also to those who participate, to the families.
And when did FRIDA start?
It started in 2015, and it was actually the first of these large public health screening initiatives. And since then, many, many other countries' initiatives started. And what was also very good that our ministry, actually, health ministry, they already very early said to us, you have also to show clearly the benefit of the screening. And we could in FRIDA in the meantime show that those who develop then clinical metabolic disease have a much milder onset of the disease. And we can indeed prevent, for example, the diabetic ketoacidosis, the complication that often occurs in those children.
So that study started really when you were thinking about trying to mitigate the effects of, you know, a child being rushed to the emergency department in, you know, diabetic crisis. But actually things have moved on with now a therapy that could delay onset. But before we talk about that, let's go to Chantal, because you also have developed a study in Belgium. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, again, as Annette says, all over the world, people have started looking for individuals who already have autoimmune type 1 diabetes without having hyperglycemia, so the early stages of T1D. And what we in Belgium, for instance, with the Belgian Diabetes Registry have been doing for more than 20 years already is looking for autoantibodies in relatives of people with type 1 diabetes, because in those you have an enrichment of the genetic risk, of course. And so the numbers that you need to screen are smaller than when you go to the general population. So the effort is less to catch more people. That being said, 90-95% of people who have a new diagnosis of T1D have nobody in the family. And that's why people like Annette have said, that's fine, family screening. If you've never screened before, start there so that you can get used to develop your communication strategies, etc. But you need to go to general population screening if we really want to have an impact on catching people before diabetic ketoacidosis happens in the general population.
And at what age would you do that general population screening? I mean, and we should say here that Italy has introduced in four of its regions population screening for both celiac disease, I think, and type 1 diabetes. But what age are they starting?
I think in Italy they have different ages where they screen. We have actually looked at various studies and It depends how often you screen. If you screen only once, the highest sensitivity would be reached at a screening age of 3 to 4 years. But if you have the possibility, which is actually better and catches more people, to screen 2 times or even 3 times, then you would start early at 2 years, but then repeat it at 6 to 7 years, repeat it at 12 to 14 years as an optimal. So for the children, it's better because they are the ones who have, of course, the highest risk for the complications, and maybe also those who respond very well now to these disease-modifying therapies. But important is also to know, and I think Chantal is something that is also what you have looked at, that many adults also develop this disease in adulthood, many people. So I would not say that screening in adulthood is not useful. We just have not so much knowledge about the best ages and to catch type 1 diabetes in adulthood.
Now, the possibility of, once you've identified these children, of following them up actually also gives you all sorts of information about the progression that you might not have had before. And you've set up a registry. So tell me about the registry, Chantal.
So we have set up a registry called the Pre-T1D Registry in Munich, and it's Dr. Ziegler leading this. We set it up together with help of the Helmsley Trust, because of the concept that we wanted to have a central place in Europe where all other registries, you know, doing screening, be it in families, being it, you know, in different circumstances in our different healthcare systems, that at least they could mirror in a pseudonymized way a minimum set of data, like the number of antibodies, one staging OGTT, that data, so that we know, is it stage one, is it stage two? And then also the monitoring, glucose, hemoglobin A1C, et cetera. So that when disease-modifying therapy trials come to Europe, that we very rapidly can see in Austria, there's so many people, in Italy, there's so many people, and where should we go to execute these trials? And there, for instance, we have started this platform, inodia.org, which is a spin-off of our Inodia project, where we hope to be a platform for accelerating intervention trials with these disease-modifying therapies. But so the registry in Dr. Ziegler's hands is really exploding, if I may say, Annette. How many people do we have already now in September 24?
Over 1,200.
So individuals,
yeah,
children mainly, with one or two autoantibody positivity that we are now having. We know where they are in Europe. So when there's an intervention, I mean, 1,200 people is not trivial. We could rapidly initiate this these trials.
Let me take out on a bit, because what you've tended to see in the past is each country having their own data set, you know, being a bit like a dragon in Lord of the Rings, you know, sitting on their little pile of gold, but actually not able to really extract the full benefit because they really need to share. And actually, you've done something very important and very forward-thinking here.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why Dr. Ziegler said we need to do this. It's now, because now we're able to convince all these countries, France and Belgium and other initiatives, to mirror their data. They can still sit like the dragon on their data, but at least mirror them in a pseudonymized way, so that at least when there is an opportunity for intervention, we can offer it.
And also, I think it's a very important aspect to harmonize the clinical care in these early stages, because this is actually something very new that we know, okay, we have identified these people, we need to monitor them, and we need somehow to come to an agreement in Europe how to do this, and also somehow how to quality control this kind of early treatment, and this is also what the registry really wants to do. I would like to mention one thing, because you said progression. this is actually also a very important aspect that we saw, that because Chantal, you mentioned relatives, one must say that many, a lot of our knowledge that we have about stages, about progression, comes from relatives. And it was actually extremely important to show what we could with our Frieda study, that this, the progression is identical in relatives to the general population, so that we are confident that we can actually build on the knowledge that we have developed from the relatives also to the general population.
Last word to you, Chantal.
No, what I wanted to add is on the monitoring, for instance. Again, with Annette, we are coordinating a big European project called Identify, and the T is a one, so go to identify.eu. But where we have different work packages, one work package Annette leads, to see in different healthcare systems throughout Europe, how should we do this general population screening? We have another work package where we measure impact. Annette has clearly demonstrated that in Bavaria, with the right communication tools, impact is minimal. People like it. Yes, there is sadness. Yes, there is some anxiety when you give the diagnosis, but it disappears and it's very acceptable. So now we want to test that, whether it's the same in Portugal, whether it's the same in Czechia. And the other work package that we have is about monitoring. Can we have the consensus where we were both part in from Breakthrough T1D on how to monitor people with antibody positivity? But now we will ask the question, can we do it better? Can we introduce novel technologies? Can we introduce a tiered monitoring intensity where we identify people with a lesser risk of rapid progression and people with a higher risk of rapid progression? So keep an eye out for Identify. We will be presenting data.
We will be keeping an eye out for it. And it's a really exciting project. And actually, something that both of you have been working on in your different ways for many, many years. And suddenly, like many of these things in science, everything is coming together. Fantastic to hear about that. And you'll be hearing more from Chantal Mathieu very shortly. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at easd.org.